try out, you happy meatball.
Jenna's looking at us like she has no idea what that's
come
from.
Come on, Jen. The Longest Yard. Come on.
Never seen it?
Haven't seen it.
One of Adam Sandler's greatest.
He has a lot of great ones.
Oh, name your top two.
Billy Madison. What's the one with Jennifer Aniston?
Oh, that's a good question.
Yeah. Just go with it?
Yeah, I think
is that
that's
what it is?
Yeah.
Really? Is that like a romantic comedy?
Yeah, I love a good rom-com.
No good at all.
I'd put 50 First Dates ahead of that in his rom-com categories. I think.
Is that Drew Barrymore?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this is DVA.
Anyway.
No, that's okay.
All the kids that might be listening to this are like, what are these movies?
Who's Adam Sandler? is he on TikTok? Like, no good. Absolutely has to be Happy Gilmore in there and Billy Madison. And there is a Happy Gilmore 2 coming. Not that we are the PR people for Adam Sandler, but apparently there's a second, which will be good.
Just tap it in.
That's the one. As you can obviously hear, Rob Calder, Jenna O'Hay, Zoe Carr, welcome to you both.
Thank you.
It's naturally due to the topic of the pod, we grabbed our two most recent players. Coops and Bestie have retired long, long, long ago and are not relevant to the content that we're
going
to... Fourth retirements.
Oh, shots fired.
I can guarantee...
You know why? Because I know they don't listen.
Yeah. I can guarantee you that Coops would feel like he can give an NBL team a good 3 minutes here somewhere and contribute to them. And he will be the best talker on court, I have no doubt. He'll be limbering up like the old guy at the YMCA and just check in somewhere. I reckon he could go.
He goes, 5 pods in a row, misses 2, and you smash him.
No. I'm confident Coops could play. I'm pro Coops.
I think you did the smashing,
Zoe. I started this, didn't
I? What's that about? Anyway, please don't bully your co-workers. We are grateful, obviously, for any ratings and reviews you are able to leave on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. That would be great. You can follow along with Talking Split in general on X or Instagram. There is a podcast that goes up every Friday. There is a new drill that goes up every Monday. Not for the next 2 weeks, though, because it's school holidays. But
enjoying the drills.
Enjoying the drills. Which is your favourite one? Scarecrow? We had that was this week. There was the 3-on-2 trap.
I like the trap one.
The trap one.
Yeah, it's something that I think everyone can work on.
Yep. Guards over dribbling it, not being able to find the outlet. Yeah, that's one of Zoe's favourites too. That's it's good little content on there. So we will try and get something up every Monday. Something we are looking to expand with that though. So if there are coaches out there that feel like they have a good drill that they would like to submit to us, more than happy for you to send them through. This could be chaos. Like this could be, you know, if you send in turnouts, I got to tell you, like it's not going up. I promise you that. Same with 3-player weaves. Won't be going up there. Just a hater. It's just my world. But, you know, when you get access to the accounts, you can put up whatever you want to put up. Like that's just how this works. So if there is anything that you want to put up there, by all means, send it through. We have had some good feedback from a couple of coaches that sort of said, hey, we really like that one where you can throw the basketball at someone else and knock their ball out. Cool. Like if that's what you want more of, let us know. We're happy to try and put some content towards that if we can. This pod topic in particular was actually a request from another coach that said, look, can you talk to my players about what they should expect at a trial, how they prepare for it, what they go through, the mental, the physical, all those sorts of things. So that's where this podcast came from. We did one of these straight out of COVID. So what year was that? Maybe 22, 23, I think it would have been, with Jenny and Coops. So they did one. So you can certainly go back and listen to that. We may end up doubling down on a couple of the things that we spoke about in that one, in this one as well. But we are going to talk through selection trials because I get it. It's a stressful time of year for coaches, obviously, as they're trying to pick teams. But for you as players, this is not the easiest thing to go through. This is probably one of the most anxious times. I think there was more stress and anxiety around trials than there would be around finals, oddly enough. It's just kind of how it works. So it's going to be a little bit of a different discussion, I suppose. We're not really talking at coaches. We are talking this more at players. Coaches obviously listen along because there might be some things we say that you should be looking for, that players should be doing that maybe you weren't looking for. Who knows? So we'll see how it sort of plays out. Trials, realistically, like you just went through your calendar, Jenna, which is a bit ridiculous over the next couple of weeks as to how many selection trials you have.
School holidays are so great.
Yeah, I can imagine. The parents think the same thing because it's like, hey, you know what? Go and trial for something because you're out of my hair for a day at least as to how that looks. Zoe, you're not too dissimilar with what you have coming up?
Yeah, we're a bit full on over the next couple of weeks. And then once we get through that, then it's all the intro camps and and things. So, yeah, September, October, November is a bit mental. We get a little bit of December and then in January.
Jeez. Great jobs you two have. Like, yeah. But it is one of those things. And amongst all of that is VJBL trials coming up, which will be through September, October for a lot of our players out there, which kind of locks you into your team. Coming up, there's going to be country champs trials for a lot of our country athletes as well. There is stuff going on everywhere. If you're not trying out for a team at the moment, you're not trying hard enough, because there is stuff going on everywhere as this goes through. I suppose, what can our players do between now and when trials start? Like, is there anything? Because there are some people that are playing their grand final this Friday night, and so their season hasn't even finished yet and trials are coming up. There are plenty of people that have been potentially off for 3 or 4 weeks now as they're going through. Like, Jim, what are some of the things that they can actually be working on between now and when their trials start?
You can work on everything.
Yeah.
You can work on your shooting. You can work on your ball handling. You can work on your defense. You can work on, even if it's just simple things like talking, getting comfortable with being uncomfortable, because I think a tryout is an uncomfortable environment to be in. And if you can get used to trying to flourish in that uncomfortableness, it'll really benefit you.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is, there's a lot of anxiety around trials. I get it. Like, you're putting yourself out to be judged by someone that may not have seen you before, has to make a snap judgment on you really quickly as to where you might fall. What would you recommend kids are working on, Zoe?
I think the biggest thing, if they're still playing, they've still got finals and things, don't think about it yet. Focus on what you're doing now, finish your finals, then you can start thinking about it. Enjoy the fact that you're playing in a grand final, and because otherwise you won't remember it at the end because you're too focused on other things. If you have been off for a while, fitness is obviously huge. Making sure that, like for mine, all I would be doing is finding 1, 2, 3 other people and just playing pickup. Like, I wouldn't be, here's my focus on this other than shooting the ball, but just play. Like, just continue to play, because you'll get all those skill sets within that. And I don't think we play enough pickup basketball anywhere, because they don't have time and we don't have venues, and that's a whole nother pod. But I think if they can, that'll cover off their fitness, it'll cover off their skill set, decision making, all those sort of things. One thing that is really important though is if you've done nothing for 3 weeks and your trial is next week, you're in trouble. Like, you can't cram for a test like this. It's something that, you know, basketball, you do need to have breaks from it, of course, but you need to keep in touch consistently. And if you haven't done that, you're going to have to go every day until your trial if you haven't been doing that already.
Yeah, and a big part of that, obviously, we talk about strength and conditioning, which is fine. 2 days before your first trial is not the first time to try a bench press. Like, you are going to have some pain everywhere, which will impact on your performance going through. So just being mindful about how you would plan that out, what you would taper towards, what you would maybe leave to the side and just to say, hey, look, that's not really relevant. A 10K run, probably not going to move the needle on, am I going to be successful at this trial, or is this going to be a bit of a waste of my time? I'd leave the 10K run. I traditionally do leave the 10K run. But
same.
Yeah, but for players, I wouldn't bother with it. I don't think it really changed anything. But the short, sharp bursts, I think, are really valuable as to what can my conditioning look like. What stretching am I getting done? How am I looking after my body? Am I hydrated? All those sorts of things. These are good habits to start building just in life in general, but also for a trial, I think that's a really valuable one. The last thing you want to do is go into a trial injured, because now it's kind of out of your hands. You got to hope that, oh, maybe they've seen me enough or those sorts of things. Don't injure yourself. Don't, like, if you get injured doing something, like playing, whatever, like, you can't control everything in that space, I don't think, but you do have to be careful about not putting yourself in just a worse position by trying to overdo something that you're not ready for.
And big things for trials is, you know, once you're in the trial, be in the trial. So at some point, at several points throughout the trial, whoever's leading it is going to say, I need, you know, 3 offense, 3 defense. Be there, you know, be on the floor. Now, if you are somebody that can't retain what's happening and you need to see things a few times, maybe step back from that. But if you're dying to get in the face of the coaches and you want to show that you can retain or listen and implement quickly, then get on the floor and be part of all the demos. Like, almost fight for it, because they're extra reps that coaches are getting to see you that I don't think is accounted for enough from athletes. I don't think they realize what that does. Like, I often will say, oh, she was in every demo. You know, like there was a – I remember a few years ago there was an athlete who was sort of on the bubble, but when it came to demo time, I'd turn around and she was already there. And it was like, well, you know, that kid wants it. Yes, you can come in. Now, I'm not saying that's going to happen every time, but, you know, she still had a level of skill that we could see could be taken further. But, you know, don't melt into the background. Be somebody that show you want to be there. You know, we say it a lot, own your environment. If coaches ask questions of the group, answer it. You might be wrong, that's okay, but answer it, and answer it loud, and answer it confidently, because no coach is going to laugh at you or make an example of you if you get the answer wrong. And if they do, then, you know, we'll have another conversation. But, yeah, there's be in that moment, prove that you want to be there, show that you want to be there, be a leader. And it's especially important for our young female athletes, because the amount of times I have to ask what somebody said to repeat what they said, because it's this, you know, I think we need to. No, that's not how we speak. So all those sort of things, they will complement what you can then do on the floor, and it will impress people.
How important, like Zoe's touched on it, Jenna, how many times have you walked up into a trial and said, right, I need five people on the floor, and like 5 seconds later you're still waiting, I need five people on the floor, where's the extra two? Those sorts of things. But it's an opportunity to stand out as a player, but it also allows you to fix any problems if they rep something. Like it happens a lot.
Yeah, and Zoe, you did touch on it. Everyone does learn differently. Some people do need to sit back and watch, so I understand that. But some people actually learn better when they're in it. So if you are one of those people, absolutely get out there and be part of the demo. And it was, I think it was the April school holidays, I had under 12 trials.
Which are chaos at the best of times.
Absolutely. I asked for 3 people to come out and demo. I had 20 on the court. And I was like, I love this confidence. I don't know where that goes as they go up in the age groups, but I wish I had that, because then I can actually kick people off and I've got the amount, rather than being like, I need 2 more.
Yeah. Why am I still waiting?
Step on the court.
Yeah, it's exactly.
Or you get the, you've got the one that kills me, is you've got, say, 4 offense, 3 defenders, and you need the 4th defender. You say, I need a defender on, and you point at that player, and somebody that's already on defense moves to them. It's like, okay, well, now I need a defender here. The numbers are wrong. This isn't – it's not who. I need another number. But it's, yeah, it's another really important thing for them as well, though, is demo time is not the time to switch off. So you've got – if you're not in the demo, like if you are someone that needs – to watch a bit and watch a few reps, that's not the time to start looking on another court or talking to your friends or just completely zoning out. That is the time to lock in, because you should be running back to your basket and going straight into what has been demoed. It shouldn't have to be shown again. And if you can do that, again, that's another impressive thing for a coach.
And a big part of it too is if you're the demo kid, it gives you the opportunity to screw it up and be corrected.
When it's okay.
Yeah, like you're expected to make mistakes in the demo. That's what it's supposed to be there for. Yes, you want it perfect at the end, of course. But if you're unsure, jump in there, screw it up. Have the coach that's probably leading the whole thing sit there and say, hey, not quite right. Here's what you need to change. Here's how you adjust it. Then you know straight off the bat. That's got to be more confidence for you, I would have thought.
For sure. And it helps me as a coach know what I've highlighted and what else I need to coach. Because if they haven't gotten right, I believe that's on me.
Yep.
Like I haven't demonstrated or explained it well enough. So it gives me a chance to then get that message across to everyone. Because if you've stuffed it up, other people are probably feeling the same way.
Yeah.
And you get to, you know, make that adjustment on the court, on the fly. And I see that in person. I'm going to remember that.
Yeah. And you're going to be further ahead when you go to your court. Like you've done it a couple of times. You've had a couple of reps, whether it be like a close out into a box out or something like that. You've already felt like what that's supposed to feel like. So then you jump into the drill and you're going to have success way earlier than everyone else that's still trying to wait in line to get their turn as they're coming forward. It's just such an easy thing, I think, to get right for a lot of our players. And, you know, obviously don't go to the point where you're going to tackle another player to get on the court or anything like that. But it is one of those areas. Get in the drill. Like, don't seep to the back of those lines. And look, experienced coaches will pick that straight away. It's like, look, that kid's nervous or they're shy or whatever the case might be. You might be walking into a trial where you know nobody. And I get it. That's daunting. That's overwhelming. That's going to be like anxiety ridden. I understand it. But the easiest way to overcome that is to jump on court and go back to your safe space where it's like, wait till I know what I'm doing on court. So the more I can get on court, the better off I'm going to be in that world. So always demo if you get the opportunity to demo.
Yeah, and I think coaches as well, like the point you just touched on, there are athletes that learn different ways. There are athletes that manage that anxiety and manage that sense of being overwhelmed differently. We had a few weeks ago at one of our Saturday sessions, we tried and I can't remember what it exactly was that we were doing, but we were doing something really different. It was just for a bit of fun. And I had some of the younger girls sort of that I watched them and they, you know, there's 3-4 reps go by and they're still on the sideline. And I went over and said, hey, are you okay? And they're like, yeah, I don't have it yet. I don't get it yet. I'm just watching. And I was like, great. I said, now get in and we'll coach you on it. Like you've watched it a few times. But they knew then that they were going in without the fear of, you know, being told off or anything like that. But they were just trying to process what was happening because it was something brand new. So coaches, if you see that, ask them what's going on. Ask them why they're staying out of the drill, or, you know, give them a chance to be selected, because, you know, it's hard. Trials are hard. And if we can try and get rid of that anxiety and that, you know, nervousness by showing them that, you know, yeah, it's okay to make a mistake as long as it's a mistake within what we're doing. So if it's a mistake because you haven't paid attention or you're not going hard enough or that sort of stuff, that's not an acceptable mistake. But if it's a mistake because you're going at a level you maybe haven't gone at before, or you're trying something brand new and you've stepped out of your comfort zone, great, they're great mistakes. So, you know, as coaches, we need to make sure that we're balancing that as well.
I think a big part of, you spoke about before, owning your environment. As a player walking in, if you know a lot of people in that environment, but you see a couple on the outer where it's like, hey, they're a little bit shy to come into this, go and grab them straight away and make them feel a part of it. Because one thing that really does stand out in trials for us, and it's probably changed my perception a little bit over the years, I used to be pick the best kids and just move on from there. Whereas I try and look a little bit deeper with it now, it's like, yeah, but which kids are the leaders? Like, which kids are the ones that want to be there, that want to get other kids
culture
involved?
Kids.
Like, they are, they're culture kids, like, you know, vibey sort of kids that are just like, hey, that kid's fun to be around. Like, how come everyone gravitates towards that kid over there? What do they do better than anyone else? They might bring those other players involved and get them into what's going on to make them feel a little bit more comfortable. Like, no one performs their best anxiety-ridden. Like, everyone's, you know, going to be really tense and worked up, but just that little bit of looseness, I think about it, it's like, hey, who are you? Where are you from? What position do you play? How long have you played for? Those types of things can be a really important part of it. I can guarantee you, any player that is listening here, from the second you are dropped off at the front of that trial, assume that you are being watched by someone that is involved with that selection
because
process.
Because you are.
Absolutely. There might be another coach that's turning up at the same time that sees you get out of the car and walk in. It might be you get to the courts and all of a sudden you're on the roller, you're getting yourself organized, you're doing your stretching, you're getting everything done, and it's like, hey, that gets professional. Like, they're really good about how they go about things. Like, what was your process, Jenna, as a player, like, before getting on court for a trial? Like, was there something you went through, like, mentally to sort of get checked in, or was it all just like, hey, this is just what I do. I'm a player and I just go do my thing.
Great question. I feel like there were some trials where I was more nervous, and that was because I knew I hadn't done the work prior.
Didn't study for the test.
Yeah.
The Rob Coulter. I think that's
I think majority of the trials I went into, I was full of confidence because I knew I had worked harder than everyone leading into that trial, and I knew I could go in there and just be me and I would be okay. But there were some trials where, yeah, you might have been a bit distracted leading into it, got a bit caught up in a few different things, which happens. That's life, right?
For sure.
And I definitely didn't feel as confident and had more anxiety going into those sessions. So I learned from that pretty quickly that I need to do my preparation well in advance of a trial.
Yeah. How long are we talking? Are we talking like weeks, months type stuff?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like I know when trials are.
Yeah.
Everyone does.
Yeah, this calendar has been circled for a while now.
Yeah.
For what's coming up.
And as Zoe said at the beginning of the pod, you need touch points all the time. Yes, you need a break away from basketball.
Yep.
But say I was on holidays, I was still going to the gym, or I was doing a bit of cross training, doing something different. So I was still staying fit, but in a different way than what I was used to. I wouldn't go too long without shooting the basketball because I knew that's what I needed as a basketball player. And that was from years of learning about myself. But yeah, I wanted to go into every trial feeling utter confident that I was going to make this team because I'd put in the work for it. And, you know, sometimes there's a saying that I like to use, different courses for different horses. Not every coach is going to like what you bring.
Yep.
It's just reality.
Yeah.
And I think I had a pretty successful basketball career, but there was definitely coaches throughout my journey that did not like what I did on a basketball court. I wanted to go into every session, every tryout feeling really confident because I knew I had done the work.
Yep.
And what happened at that trial is sort of out of my hands at that point, but I knew that I was going in having done the work, having been prepared, and I could step on the court, and I love basketball. So stepping on a basketball court was my favorite thing to do. So I could go in there, have fun, and try and enjoy the process at every moment.
Really important point you hit on there. It's out of my control. My only job is to go out there and play and do what the coach asks of me. Whether they pick me or not, that's not something I can control. I choose to dive on a loose ball. I choose to box out. I choose to run a lane. I choose to throw the extra pass. Yeah, okay, they're all choices, but I don't get a choice on whether they pick me or not.
And the world won't end either.
No.
Like that's something that's, you know, we've all missed out. If you're going to put yourself up as a player, you're going to miss out on some things. Some things will, you're not... You know, very few make everything they go for all the time. So it's okay to be disappointed if you do happen to miss out on whatever it is, whether it's a team that you're striving for or a program, that's fine. It's okay to feel disappointed, but it's not the end of the world, and it's definitely not the end. It's not, you know, just because it might not be now doesn't mean not ever. And responses to those sort of situations, I think, are very important from both an athlete and a parent perspective of how they deal with that. Because I think resilience is something that's probably lacking a little bit in young people, not just athletes, young people.
Aging yourself a little bit.
I am. Yeah. That sounded very old. Yeah. But it's a bit of a problem, and we've got to sort of sit in that a little bit and learn how to then fight back and you know, either do the work required, you know, or whatever it is to try and put themselves in the best position to make that again in the future. But I think we put a lot of – and Coops talks about it a lot. I think young athletes in particular – make their identity the fact that they're a basketball player, and that's not the case. You're all great people, great kids, great people, and that's what comes first. And you play basketball, and if you love basketball, you know, you'll still get great things out of it even if you miss that first team or whatever it is you're striving for.
Yeah, and everyone will have different goals going into it, I think. I would be hesitant to put in I want to make this team or this program because I think that's more an outcome than anything else. What I would probably put together before I even go into a trial is, look, what three things do I really want to focus on in this trial? I want to be the best defender there, or you know, I want to be the best teammate. I want to be the most connected person with everyone else there. Those things I think you can really easily control. The outcome then is a byproduct, in theory, of what's gone on there, because I think people can get really hung up. I want to make that team. And for some kids, it might just be, hey, look, you know, I want to make the threes. Like I was in the fives last year. I want to make the threes this year. That's dangerous because you don't really know all the other stuff that's going on around. Like there's, okay, but what if there's a really good bottom age group coming up from the age group below, which is going to impact? What if there's kids coming in from the outside the club that's going to impact on that? Nice to have a goal for it, for sure, but don't be so hung up on the outcome.
I disagree a little bit.
Oh, no, that's okay. It's quite a goal.
But I think absolutely have those goals.
Yep.
But if you don't reach it, that's okay. And you can readjust those goals. For sure. I think it's really important to know what your goal is, to know what you're working towards.
Yep.
And you might not make the your goal might be to make the first team in under 14s, and you might make the second or third. And then when you're top age in under 16s, again, your goal might be to make the first team, but it might be the second this time. So I think it's important to have those goals and to work towards that. But you're not going to hit every goal that you set.
True.
And that's where you need to readjust. And it's like, okay, well, why did I miss out on the on my goal of making the first team? Because my defense isn't up to scratch. So in this third team, that's going to be what I'm working towards, so that when I'm top age 16s, then I can make the first team, because I've put everything into the feedback that I was given or what I've self-reflected on that I can do better as.
Yeah, that makes sense. No, I like where you're going with that, because I think it is an important thing that if you are going to have those goals, maybe check in with a former coach or a parent or someone like that and say, look, are these realistic? Like, it's, you might sit there and say, I want to make the under 16 state team. Okay, cool. You're still in under 14s. You've got a fair stretch to go until you're even eligible for that. What are the things that can be put in place to work towards that? And I mean, the feedback one, you alluded to it before, Zoe, and you hit it on the head then, Jenna. Feedback. After trials, you may not be happy with the outcome.
The F word.
The other F word, gotcha. So
you don't make it, and there's one F word, and then you get the other F word. One comes.
Like, it is a difficult one to deal with, because I think coaches have it all the time. Like, it was not unusual to have, like, so the first year I did, was a head coach of a state team. We had 146 kids at our trials. It is not feasible for me to give feedback on every single kid that came to that trial. So, how do you ask for feedback without coming across as just this, oh, I'm asking because I want justification rather than I want feedback on where I can get better? Is there a good way to ask that either of you have seen to this point with, you know, if I'm not thrilled with the outcome, or even if I am happy with the outcome, can I get some feedback on my trial?
As you said, it's really hard for you with 146. Yep. You cannot give feedback to every single athlete that comes to try out.
And I did not.
But you have a coach that sees you every Friday night, every Sunday morning, and
or
perhaps
a director of coaching or something.
Yeah, so there are people that you can go to that will be able to give you some really specific feedback that you can work on. And it might not, every coach is going to see something different as well. Mm. So the feedback that you get from Zoe might be different from the feedback that you get from myself. But it's all things to make you better as a basketball player. And it's up to you to actually go away and work on those things, so that when you come back the next time and you're in front of those coaches, they're like, oh yeah, her one-on-one defense has improved out of sight.
Yep.
Like, she has a real dedication and application to that now that I did not see last year. So if you can make those steps and really take that feedback on board, and don't take it personally that, oh, I'm a crap basketball player because I didn't make this team and I've got this feedback. No, use that feedback to get better as a basketball team, sorry, as a basketball player for each team that you play with.
Mm. Yeah.
I think the first, when we're talking about the right way, if there's a process in place, follow it. because it's the sure way to get whoever you've bypassed the process to get information from, to get them offside. And it's going to get back to the person. Yeah, it's
that you haven't followed process. That is a red mark.
Yeah, like, we have it with our state teams, like at Combine, for example, or at Cup, you know, where we pick our teams. And, you know, the process is you go through the administrator gets the feedback, and then it comes out to you. If you go direct to the coach, or direct to me or Jenna or Bestie or Coops, or we actually don't really have to answer, because you haven't gone through the process. Now, we tend to, but we also tend to answer with a bit of sting on it, because it is
starts negatively. Because your first thing is, you haven't followed process.
You haven't followed process. So, well, you know, and that's the first sign to us that you're coming at this from a hostile sort of stance, rather than, and again, that then tells us that you're not interested in the feedback, you want justification, or you just want to have a go at us, which again comes with the territory of coaching. We all know that. But it's not going to do any favours. So if there is a process, please make sure you follow it. And that's anywhere. That's not just with us. That's at clubs, schools, you know, wherever else, follow that process and you'll get a better outcome.
Yep. It's I remember a kid asked me once for feedback, and you know, you get the subject heading like feedback on selection, and you kind of groan a little bit. It's like, oh, I don't want to do this, or what's this going to look like? And the player, to their credit, is like, look, thanks for your time at trials. I felt like I did these two things pretty well. I felt like I did these three things poorly. Do you agree with it? And if you agree with it, can you give me some things to work on that I can address these with? And it's like, oh, I was the happiest I've ever been writing feedback.
You picked. I take it back.
But to be honest, like, it was the happiest I've ever been giving feedback. It's like, well, actually, this kid's done a little bit of self-reflection here. They've looked through this, not just, toys out of the cot. I'm not happy with what's happened. They've looked through it and thought, actually, I'm going to come about this a different way. Love the kid for it. It's fantastic.
Yep.
Like, more of that is kind of where you are. Because I think, and you guys will go through it, you have your six criteria for selection and those sorts of things and talent ID. Very rarely does everyone hit all six. Like, you're getting one, maybe two, and then there's some gaps there. So it's like, well, if the player's been able to walk away and identify, hey, these are my gaps, now I'm actually searching for knowledge on how do I address those gaps rather than you having to identify it for me. Because we know how much self-reflection needs to happen in basketball. But how much is a real issue of you need to be told what to do? And if you can't work it out for yourself, and look, ages come into this as well. We wouldn't expect under 12 or under 14 kids to really be that self-aware of what's going on. But 16s and 18s, you probably should have a pretty good idea on where you maybe come up a little bit short in trials. So I think there's good ways to go about it for mine. And look, if you want to do half my job for me, not arguing. but it was funny that the three things they said they weren't great at, I disagreed with two of them. It's like, actually, I thought you were okay at those. But maybe look at these ones over there, which didn't make them necessarily happier. But it was something that's like, well, actually, I can give you some tangible feedback on this now. Because one of the things what I remember clearly was their decision-making on when to shoot the ball or not. Like, they went into a trial and they highlighted in their email. It's like, look, I felt like you needed a scorer. So I shot that thing every time it touched my hands. It's like, hey, credit to you, because I did. But by the same token, the shot selection maybe wasn't quite where it needed to be. So maybe address it this, this, and this. I'd recommend filming again, having a look back on, look, was that a good shot? Was that not a good shot? Those types of things. So I think there's some scope in there to get feedback the right way. Have you had much of the good and the bad on that, Jenna?
Yeah.
Tons.
Yeah.
Yeah. Does it only come from a player or a parent?
I've been in this role just over a year.
Yep.
And my experience, it's generally coming from parents.
Yep.
Which I love my parents that they always encouraged me to seek my own feedback.
Yep.
Because I think coaches respect that more because you're speaking directly. And the parent can be there. That's okay.
No issue with that. Yep.
Yeah. But if it's coming directly from the player, I think it's I trust that it's them that's wanting the feedback and it's them that's wanting to improve. Whereas it's coming from the parent all the time, it's kind of like, well, is this just your justification?
Yep.
And what's your child actually thinking?
Yeah, that's a really good point. And this is where, like, I don't know, both of you are all about it, like the journals for players in particular. Those things are so valuable. Walking into every trial, hey, what are the things I'm focusing on? Coming out of every trial, assess yourself on where they were. Did I hit that mark? Yes, no. In between, maybe it's room for improvement on the next one as you get to go into it, but also what do you focus on the next thing as well? I think that's really valuable. And that way, if you are seeking feedback, well, now you've got something tangible that you can walk back to and say, oh, actually, this, this, and this is what I thought. That, for mine, makes it a little bit more of a substantial question to be asked. Because, I mean, as you said, Jenna, there are parents, and look, I don't criticize the parents for it, that, you know, in most cases, they're just protective of their kids.
Of course, and I understand that too.
Get it completely. Like, we all understand that. We certainly don't hate on the parents because of that. But it is one of the things that we have to be super conscious of with our kids in particular is that, well, okay, if the message comes back of here are the things you need to work on, is it making it to the player or not? And when it comes from the player asking the question, well, we know it is.
And when they're looking you in the eye and you can tell that they're really listening to the feedback that you're giving them as well, I love that shit.
But it's what that also teaches them from a life perspective, you know, of not fighting their own battles.
Taking ownership of their journey.
Like it's about them and what they want and being able to have a conversation with someone who they may be a little bit intimidated by and how they get through that conversation and those things to set them up for post-basketball. Because at the end of the day, I mean, it's a little bit different at the moment. You know, people are playing into their 40s, which is awesome. But generally, for most, basketball's done at like 35. There's still a lot of life left after
much
that.
Much early for some of us.
Yeah, well, me too. Yeah. But
I was 35 exactly, I think.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go. I was about 15.
But there's a whole lot of life after that, and life in the world. And the world is very different to sport. So that encouraging that kind of lesson, I think, is huge. But to just, I suppose, circle back to things to do like at trials, and we talk about getting in the face of the coaches and things that frustrate me, and I know frustrates Jen, is if you're at the trial, say, 15, 20 minutes beforehand and you don't step onto the floor until you are called onto the floor, it's really annoying. Like, we complain about how...
No, it's funny. Jenna had no idea where you were going with this, and her stance has completely changed now, and she's furious.
Because I have a story.
Oh, we're coming to that. Zoe first, but I've got the button ready for you, Jenna.
Well, it's more just we complain about not having access to shoot the ball or to work on our game or whatever. Here's a court for you, and yeah, you've got a trial, but you'll be okay. Get on the floor. Like, shoot the ball, play one-on-one, play horse, I don't care. Get on the floor rather than just sitting there having life chats.
Just got it.
First time I've used this button. Yep. So, not long ago, we had SDP grad camp, and it was a 90-minute session. I think it was a 30-minute break, a 60-minute session. So quickly go in, have a little bit of food, girls having drinks or whatever. I come back out with 5 minutes to go on the clock before we go into our second session. Not a single person on the court. Not one. Not one person had a ball in their hands.
Social time.
I was shocked.
Yeah.
Yep.
Shocked.
Yep.
And I will tell you, it was not the hardest grad camp. It's not as if I killed them in that first 90-minute session because they had a game the night before, they had training the next day. So I was like, you know, lots of people on each basket.
Yep.
We'll work hard, but in short spurts. Not a single person had taken a single shot in the 30-minute break.
And you know what blows my mind out of that? Most kids will walk out there and start shooting threes. It's like, okay, yeah, mm-hmm. You might have to go and chase down some rebounds for that. Walk your backside to the foul line. Feel free to get some of those up, which is pretty much low impact, high reward if you make those.
Even some just form shooting one hand, anything. Can you tell I'm real fired up about this still?
There's a little bit of PTSD about this.
This was like a month ago.
Yeah. Like, it's the angriest I've ever seen Jenna. Like, it's, you know. But I
didn't let them have the next 5 minutes. I was like, warm up right now. We are going.
And fair enough too. Like, that is one of those things too where it's like, use what you've been given. Like, and now, if that is a case of there is a team on before your trial, say your trial doesn't start until 10, but the group before you finishes at 9:50, obviously don't walk on at 9:50, but there's 10 minutes in between where you can go and get some shots up. You can do some stuff on the side. You should be on the roller well before then anyway, because if there is one thing that will annoy me at a trial, turn up late and unprepared.
Up late and you don't have your shoes on, oh my goodness.
Sometimes that's not the athlete problem. It could be stop a parent. It. Like,
No. Sorry. The lateness doesn't bother me, but, oh, sorry.
The dawdling in.
I understand, I don't want my shoes outside. Well, if you're going to be late, your shoes better be on. So then you can get straight into what you're doing and motor, like, especially in a trial. Definitely coaches that are listening, you cannot blame kids for being late. Like, at the end of the day, and if it's a constant thing, you need to have a discussion with the parents. If they're senior athletes, well, that's obviously very different. And you need to find out what's going on there. But
if you're not early, you're late.
Yeah, that is, yeah. And I take that probably to the real extreme borderline personality disorder where I'll get somewhere 45 minutes early just to avoid being 10 minutes early.
But what if there's like 8 lots of traffic that I have to try and get, like, yeah, I get it. We can testify a little
bit. It's ridiculous. But you don't have to be that far. But you have to be there. And if you are running late for whatever reason, because things come up. I mean, it's Melbourne. Like, there's traffic and there's all kinds of stuff that can push you, even if you've left early, can push you to being late. Tell someone. Just let somebody know, because, again, that will, when you run in and you're ready to go and you say, sorry, I'm late, the coaches go, no worries, because they're across it and it's all good. I think that courtesy of communication, but also communication in your trial. Like, you want to get noticed, be the loudest kid on the floor, and not the loudest kid on the floor in your break, loudest kid that is directing traffic, that is, you know, talking up your teammates, that's celebrating your teammates and all that sort of stuff. You know, high-fiving, getting everyone involved, making sure you're on task. You know, something I always keep an eye on in trials is who's organising off the floor while the drill is happening. So if the next group's going to come on, who's organising that? Because that's a real sign of leadership for mine. That sort of communication, it is so noticeable and so valuable. So coaches are going to keep their eye on you. Or if they get into a selection room, so I remember back in Clubland and we had a trial that had so many kids, and we got in there and we were talking about it and someone mentioned an athlete's name. And we couldn't quite remember. And then someone said, oh, you know, the one that was talking off split line and, you know, like, was really, really loud. And everyone, oh, yeah, like, be that kid, because that's something that's very impressive and gets you noticed by a lot of coaches.
A young athlete I've noticed when she comes to trials wears funky hairstyles. Yeah. Definitely makes her stand out. But just on what you're talking about with communication and leadership and stuff, don't be that athlete that when the head coach is watching, you're all about it. And when you think they've walked away, you stop.
Yeah.
Because whether I'm on court 1, 2, or 3, I can generally see all the courts. And whether I'm standing on 1 and you're on 2, I can see that you've stopped doing those things when I was on that baseline of that court. So be that person all the time. Because if you're going to just do it when you think the head coach is watching and then I walk away and I'm still watching and you're not doing it,
gets found out quickly.
Yeah. Real quick.
Yeah. So round 7, when I have to make a decision on who do I sub in and who do I not, so, oh, that kid works when I think I'm watching, but that kid doesn't necessarily want to work all the time. It's a real easy sub. Like, that's the reality of it. Like, it's, you're always being watched. Like, one of the
always have eyes on you.
There is, I know I've thrown out a few pet peeves here. One more, as it turns out.
Bounce passes in transition.
Hey! Yeah.
I think we may have addressed that one enough.
I have coaches come up to me saying I always laugh when I see a football bounce pass in transition.
Jenna walked up to me the other day. She's like, oh, I meant to tell you something. I can't think what it was. Oh, did you see that bounce pass in transition from this play to the? No, I didn't.
You know why it's exciting? Because only 1 in 100 work.
Do you know what's funny? So my brother Luke, he lives in Ireland. He listens to the pod all the time. He actually sent me.
That's our 0.002% of our Irish listeners. It's him.
It's Luke. Shout out, Luke. Thanks for listening. But he sent me some clips on white chocolate. He's like, you have to show Rob this.
Yeah. And I'm all about it. Trust me. Like, it's he is the exception that proves the rule. Anyone listening, young players, go and watch Jason Williams' highlights. He throws some stuff that is out of control good. Like, it is, it's phenomenal watch. Would I like everyone to pass like that? Maybe not. But those that can do it, great. I remember playing juniors with a kid that sort of had that ability to throw some stuff, and the amount of times I wore a basketball to the head was ridiculous because I just did not see it coming. But anyway, back to my other pet peeve.
Yes, Oz.
Kids that sit there, finish their drink, go and try and find mum and dad in the stand somewhere, hold their drink bottle up and start shaking it as in, I've run out of water, you need to go and fill this up. No. You should have brought two drink bottles or three drink bottles if that might be the case. It is not your parents' job to go and run after you like a servant and fill up drink bottles. Be better organized. Or go and fill it up yourself. That's quite okay too. Like if you have to walk up to the coach and say, hey coach, I've run out of water. Can I just go and fill this up and I'll be right back? Coaches will sit there and go, yeah, that's fine. Not a problem. Be better organized. I cannot stress this enough because straight away that tells me either unprepared, which is a little bit of a cross, or selfish in that someone else has to go and do this for me. Now, there might be some kids that are injured that sit on the sides that can potentially go and do that for you. And to those kids that are injured at trials that want to go and fill up drink bottles for other people, salt of the earth,
bless
people,
your cotton socks.
Take my hat off to you. Great job by you. But absolutely not waving your drink bottle at your parents. They're going
or throwing it at them.
Oh, jeez, that one. Frustrates me.
I've never seen this before.
Oh, really?
No, I've noticed.
No.
See, different coaches notice different things.
This is very true.
Yeah.
Very true.
Never.
That's, some kids have heard about it when they've done that with me that I'm a little bit different and I don't mind them asking their parents to fill it up.
Okay. Yeah, I'm
but
good with that.
Yeah, shaking it at them or throwing it at them or demanding. No. They're here to help you. If you haven't brought two drink bottles, then it's, can you please fill this up for me? Rather than, because I'd prefer them stay on the court than have to run off and fill up the drink bottle. Yep. So, but yeah, that for mine, it's a respect thing. And I think it shows a level of respect, even though it's to somebody you're so comfortable with, like your parents, that, you know, I think sometimes we forget how much they do for them. And yeah, that sort of behavior is just, for mine, it's not okay. Big part of my program is gratitude and that sort of behavior is not being grateful for the fact they've brought you here to have an opportunity to play a sport that you love. And yeah, so that's got to be, that's not just, you're not just grateful while you're at basketball, you're grateful as a child, as a student, as a brother, sister, daughter, son, whatever. So, yeah, that it's a pet peeve of mine too, and kids definitely hear about it. But it's also something I notice at trials too.
Yeah, anytime you see a parent walking towards the court, you sort of in the back of your head's like, is this a good or a bad interaction coming up here? This we'll see how. To be fair, they normally get the first one. And it's usually a fairly sarcastic, oh, did you run out of water? Oh, that's unfortunate. What do you reckon could have maybe fixed that problem? Oh, second drink bottle. Yeah, okay, cool. Well, maybe try that next week and see how this goes. If it continues to happen after that, it's a far more direct conversation with, hey, this is not good enough. Like, you need to be better organized. That's a big thing. Like, in particular, those that are going into full day trials, there is no excuse to be running out of food, drink, those types of things. Like, you've got to be better organized as you come into the gym, whether it be have you brought your lunch, are you going to the canteen for lunch, whatever the case might be. But just make sure you've got something tangible that you can sit there and say, hey, look, I know I'm going to at least have enough water for this, or I know where I can get water from for this, whatever the case might be in that. Just be organized in that one, because I remember a state team kid that came to a trial, and this is back in the days where we were probably a little unreasonable with how long our trials went for. They were like a 5-hour trial and it was like a 2-hour session, a 1 hour off and a 2-hour session. This is when we had like 80 or 90 kids. I remember this kid like packed like two bags, walked in with two bags. There's the basketball one and there's all the stuff for the 1 hour in between. And it was like foam roller, food, like, and it was like fruit, chewy lollies, like additional Gatorade or something like that. Then there was like, you know, additional pair of socks that he could put on in between to get out of the shoot. Like, it was clinical how good it was, and it's like, that's a kid that's prepared. And not a massive surprise, younger sibling, had seen the other siblings gone through before and thought, hey, I've got to get this stuff done. Credit to him, did, and was fantastic. Like, but that is a kid that just put the work in and was organized. So even like the night before you go to a trial, pack the bag, make sure you've got everything, make sure you've got a light and a dark top. I would normally bring two of each if you can, just to make sure that if someone needs to, hey, can you go light, you've got something you can change into really quickly rather than, you know, the hard one. And again, I'm not bagging on any clubs or associations here. Orange and red are not light or dark. They're in between both. Like, find a way to get a black and a white if you can, just so that you can be easily separated. Because the amount of times where it's like, hey, we've got a kid in an orange singlet on the white team, but we've also got a kid in the orange singlet in the dark team, which one are they? And it just throws everything out. So if you can find a way to get light and dark, as in white and black, fantastic. If you're at a club or something like that, or if you come to a BV trial, obviously wear that uniform and that will sort your problems out for you. But just be organised in that space, because you will have to allocate teams as a coach at various stages. You just got to make sure that we can put them on teams so that they can play.
You know our SDP uniform, our light is orange.
Yeah, I'm aware of it. But everyone is. Checking. No. But everyone's is. So that's okay. Yeah. So it lines up nicely. Okay. It's when you go elsewhere, yeah, that's when the problems start. So you do just have to be a little bit conscious of that.
I have a question for you both.
Yep.
If a kid is not understanding something at trials, when is the appropriate time to ask that question?
As in the kid to ask the question? For mine, it's in the demo. Because if
you want them to ask the question in front of everyone?
Yep. Because if they don't understand it, chances are there's at least 10 to 15 others that don't understand it too, but don't have the guts to put their hand up and ask the question. So, again, that's impressive to me to have that sort of bravery to not only help themselves but help others that may not have that kind of ability to put their hand up and ask the question. But for mine, all questions should be asked in the demo. So once you get back to courts or baskets, you're on and you can go straight into it and go from there. If it's kind of constant, like you're getting constant questions,
then and it's really slowing down
and
the
it's
day.
Slowing down the day, then it might be, hey, let's go figure this out on the run. But yeah, I wouldn't expect that to happen, probably particularly with young females. So yeah, that's like we had it on a Saturday session. We were doing something. I think it was rap switching, and one athlete just didn't get it. Hadn't heard of it before. Hadn't seen it.
Which is fine.
Which is absolutely fine.
Yeah.
Because we were able to fix it before she went to the basket and show her what it was, you know, break it down even more and put her in the drill. So she was on the side. The others were demoing it, but she couldn't catch it by not doing it. She put her hand up and asked a question. She's like, I've never seen this before. Ask the question. I was like, hey, jump in. So she jumped in. We went through it. I was like, any other questions? She's like, nah, got it. And then she was brilliant from then on.
People learn differently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but it's also, I think, coaches need to be open to that too. So always check for questions. You know, are there any questions before you go back to the baskets? Open the door for them to say, hey, it's okay for you to ask now, because there aren't a lot that will break into your demo and say, oh, by the way, I don't understand this. Are there any questions?
Yeah, I think it's important to finish the demo and finish your explaining and then open
the
door for questions, because if you open it earlier, you'll probably answer it throughout your demo anyway.
Correct.
For sure. And I do agree. I would prefer the question at the demo, but I would also be welcoming of a player that walked up to me as you're breaking and saying, look, just for clarification, I don't get it. Or do you mean this, this, and this? Because their terminology might be different from what they've heard to what they're hearing now. I'm okay with that, but we do have to be understanding that some players won't get it, and that's okay. Like that's not a problem. Some players will have heard it be described differently. We need to sort of just connect the dots for them in that world. But I would always recommend that coaches be welcoming of the question.
Hmm.
It's coming from a good place, and that kid has probably been nervous as all get out, thinking, I need to ask this. And they've sort of worked themselves up into a bit of a tiz about, can I go and ask this? And if you just bite back, well, they're never going to ask again. They're going to continue to make mistakes, and it's going to be a really negative experience for everyone. So empower them to ask the question. I like the idea of finishing on, hey, questions? Like, we're good. But always just that little bit of a check-in. And you can normally do it as a coach too, I think, where you just have a little bit of a scan over, okay, which kid's looking the most scared at the moment? Probably that one. They might have a question. So you can just walk past, hey, we all good? Excellent. No worries at all. Oh, you need to ask something? Cool. What do you got now? So just sort of fixing that problem before.
For the athletes, though, they need to be genuine questions.
Yep.
We can tell a mile off if this is a question you're asking us because you want us to think, how good is it that you ask questions? Did that make sense?
Yeah, I knew where you were going.
Yeah. So, for instance, I've had an athlete ask me once, So after this, do you want me to box out? Well, yeah, of course. Like, that's a question for the sake of asking a question. Yeah,
they're looking for validation.
They're looking, yeah. Yeah. So it's more, if you don't genuinely don't understand something, definitely ask a question. If you are asking questions for attention, we will spot that a mile away.
Yep. So, and again, if you need to know the answer to something, ask. Ask a peer that might be in the line with you that's like, hey, is this what they're talking about when this happens? That's a great way of getting some information without having to stop the whole drill or ask a coach or anything like that. But I would always say ask questions. Like, it's the easiest way to find out if we understand something as players. As if I put myself in that category, but it's the easiest way to find out. Like, can you repeat it back to me? Like, that's really what, and we go through it as coaches as well. Like, do you really understand something? Probably not until you've had to teach it. And once you've taught it, then you can probably check for, okay, do you actually understand this well enough to be able to go and teach it to someone else? That's a big part of it. So there's lots of little things that I think go into that. I don't want to go down the how do you get noticed as a player, because I don't think that's quite the right question in particular, because like, hey, wear bright shoes. It's like, hey, did you see that kid with the bright orange shoes? It's like, yeah, but they couldn't play. So you can get noticed for the wrong things as well in that. How do you fit into a group that you've potentially never met anyone before, you've been given some really limited structure, the ball doesn't come anywhere near you? How do you try and be seen, I suppose, in that space as a player?
There are so many ways to impact the game of basketball without the ball in your hands. So don't rely on that, because, yeah, it might not come to you. But you can play great defense and get a deflection. You can be in the lanes and get a steal. You can get every single rebound that's available to you. There are so many ways to impact the game of basketball. And in a game of basketball that goes for 40 minutes, how often is the ball actually in your hands?
Even if it's being shared.
Yep.
Very little.
Yep.
Yep.
Without a doubt.
So, yeah, cut off the ball, get on the offensive rebounds, get defensive rebounds, push out in transition, play really good defense, get up and disrupt the ball, talk on defense, communicate, help your teammates. I know you worked me into that question.
Every now and again I get something right with that, but...
But you can see how fired up I get about it, because it's not an excuse.
No, it's not. And it's one of the first things, look, and again, full transparency. We've all been sent someone's domestic stats for a trial where they've missed something else. Like, we get it.
Okay? I've got it pending in about 1 month's time. Yeah. It'll be in my inbox.
Without a doubt. Like, we all understand it. But and usually in the request for feedback, oh, they didn't get enough chance to shoot it or whatever the case might be. I get it. But you can impact winning other ways. And when you hit the nail on the head, Jenna. Like, how often did you get someone else open? Like, how often did you make the extra pass? How often did you run the lane so that someone else got a layup? Believe it or not, a lot of coaches do actually notice that stuff. And as much as that kid scores every time they touch it, yeah, but does anyone else?
And like, they're shooting it over three people.
Yeah. Like, is that a good shot to be taking in the first place?
Well, and another one to look at is, are they just on the end of things?
Yep.
So who's creating it? You know, like, it's not just about – obviously, putting the ball in the rim is a skill, no question. And you've got to – if you've got that ability, it's a massive advantage. But we as coaches – should be looking deeper into it and saying, okay, a catch and shoot layup wide open because, you know, player X over here continues to draw two and three players and find them and hit them on target, on time, where they want it so they can make those layups. That is just as valuable, if not more valuable, because people can make layups, but not everyone can make that pass or make that decision or create. So we need to make sure as coaches we're looking deeper into it rather than just the kid that might come to your trial and have 40.
Yeah, they're easy to find. Like, honestly, one other thing I think for players, don't be concerned if you get moved court. Like, sometimes you just might be in the wrong space at the wrong time. You happen to be walking past the coach and it's like, hey, we're bringing two players over here. We need to send two back. Don't read too much into it. A lot of the case, it's really not that big a deal. You're just going to play with different kids. Enjoy the challenge. Like, you're playing against kids you may not have seen before or players that you may have seen but never played with, those sorts of things. It's okay. Like, just go on. Because there are so many times where I've moved a kid up or down a court depending on what's going on and had to move them back again pretty much straight away because they've either really struggled or dominated once they've got there. And it's like, actually, we've got to flip that back. So don't read too much into it. Just go and be the best version of who you are wherever you go with that and everything else will work out.
It's especially from, say, the 1-2 court down to the – if you get moved down to the 3-4 court, if that deflates you completely to where you can't perform, then that's probably where you should be because you want athletes seeing that as a challenge rather than just, you know, falling to bits because of what they perceive as something that's been a bit of a challenge, a bit of a mark on them.
And I've had that feedback like, oh, I was on the whatever court they might think it is. Well, are you dominating on that court?
Mm.
Are you creating for others? Are you getting steal? Like, if you're just blending in on that court, then yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's where you belong.
Yeah. Yep. Well, and it's funny because there was one year I took a largely bottom age team in under 18s and had obviously the majority of that group again when they were top age 18s. And we were at trials and sent one of our better kids down to the 3-4 court. And like the collective gasp in the entire gym of like, whoa, that kid's going down there. It's like, no, just relax. We're picking him. Like we don't need to see him on the 1-2 court. We need to see them, to see other kids. So we just need to make room somewhere and that's where we've made room. Went down there and was terrible. And I remember walking past the kid. It's like, mate, what's going on here? Like we sent you down here not because you've done anything wrong, but just we need to see other kids. Of course we're picking you in those teams. You were there last year. Why would we not pick you now? He's like, it messed with me. Like I thought all of a sudden, it's like, man, I thought about every turnover I had last year and every missed shot I had last year and it's all come back to bite me now. It's like, hey, relax. We're good. Like I'm still picking you. I promise you we're still picking you. Like just that sort of stuff. Try not to get too hung up on it. Just sit there and go, yep, no worries. Got it. Go do your thing.
And give your all no matter what court you are on.
Yeah.
Don't leave anything in the tank.
Yep.
You've got either a 3-hour trial or I think our longest one might be – maybe 5 hours.
Yep, tops.
But don't go home with energy in the tank and wishing you had have done more. Oh, I could have done this. I could have done that. Go home with no regrets. Leave it all out there and then it's out of your hands. It's out of your control. You've given your all and you can be proud of that.
Yep.
Absolutely. And I don't think there's anything wrong with coming up short. It's like, cool, learning experience. This is where I need to grow on it. And if you don't make the team you want to make but you get to make the team down, probably more court time. Like that's how you need to look at it. Really, are you better off being the 10th player in the first team or the best player in the second team?
Best player in the second team.
And there are times where that, as coaches, those conversations are had. So especially if it's a bottom age player and like in club land when we're talking about picking teams and it's, well, she could sit here and not play a lot of minutes or she could go to the twos and play all the minutes as a bottom ager. Let's do that for the better of her and her or him and their game and their development. So, yeah, I think sometimes the brain ticks a little bit too much. Just try and roll with it and try and make the best out of every situation or wherever you land or wherever it is. Just go and give, as Jenna said, give everything you've got to it and see what happens.
No, I don't disagree. If any players are looking to do anything like because they are worked up or anything like box breathing is a really easy one. Like that 4-4-4-4 is just a really easy way to just slow the heart rate a little bit. 4 minutes in, 4 minutes.
Wow.
I've just killed a kid. 4 seconds inhale, 4 seconds hold for it, 4 seconds exhale, 4 seconds hold. So in through your nose, out through your mouth is how that's going to work. Just to slow your heart rate a little bit gives you a little bit of time to sort of process everything. That's a really easy way. Of just centering yourself again, I think, like because you know it's stressful. Like we get it, it's stressful. But thank you both for jumping into this one. I understand reliving the playing days to a large degree here as we're now in that coaching space. But I think it is valuable for our players to go and have a little bit of a listen as to what they are going to go through as well. It's actually an exciting time. Like it's the start of a new season.
Try and enjoy it.
Yeah, absolutely. Like it's stressful for everyone. Coaches are going through it as well. Like I can promise you that. So. Good luck to everyone involved. Thank you both for jumping in. And we're on a little bit of a break for 2 weeks of the school holidays and there's pretty much no one in the BV offices for a little bit as you're all around basketball court. So we'll be back probably that first or second week back of term 4. Thank you everyone for listening.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Talking Split Podcast. Make sure you like and comment on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to share and subscribe so that you never miss an episode.